Mary in the Megillah, in Megillah Esther. After all, they don't seem to add anything to the main crux of the story. One mahalach could be as follows. If you look in the first two prakim, the Megillah is trying to give us a sense of the general cultural atmosphere in Shushan at that time. What are we dealing with? What kind of a society are we talking about here? We're talking about a society in which the upper echelons of government, what are they involved in? What concerns them? What
money,
concerns them?
Money,
non-stop partying. That's what concerns them. What concerns them is non-stop partying. Official government action is that we're going to have a party. For how long?
100 days.
How long? First party?
180
days. Yeah, you know how long that is? That's like 6 months. 6 month party.
It's a long party.
And then after that, you might think they've overdosed on party. No! Another party, but another week long party. And opulence and Ashtiyah Kadosh, Ein on Ace, it's like official government policy. You can drink as much as you want. Don't worry. No pressures. You can get drunk if you want. You don't have to. Everything's fine, right? This is what the government is about. This is what concerns society. Is the party. Okay, right. Okay. And maybe that's why the Megillah finds it necessary. If you look, look at the beginning over here. If you look at the beginning, in Pasuk Vav, Perek Aleph Pasuk Vav, Chur, Karpas, Tcheles, Achuv, who cares what they had at this stupid party? It describes all the materials and the gold and the silver. Pasuk Zayim, Vashkos, Bichlei, Zahav, Pasuk Ches, Vashtiyah, Kadaz, Enones, all the details of how exactly the party was set up. And what's the role, by the way, of the queen? What's the role of the queen? to be shown off as an object for people's viewing entertainment. And a major crime for the queen not to be interested in having herself turned into an object of people's viewing entertainment. A major crime. And what are the criteria for picking a new queen in Perek Beis?
She's beautiful.
Beautiful, that's the only criteria. And how do you judge it? Whoever pleases Achashverosh the most in their one-on-one nighttime interaction. And this is how you choose the queen. And if you look, by the way, in Perek Beis again, you have this whole system set up. They go first to this place, and then they get 6 months worth of oils and this and that and besamim and it's like it's like they're a piece of meat basically. You spice them up like this and you prepare them like that to get it just so medium rare, you know, nice medium well and then she served to the king. This is a sick society, a society which is totally sunk in the most base, and as well as a moral type of physicality and materialism. Why is this important to us? It's interesting. Interesting to note, our society is not the most materialistic society that ever has existed. There was always Shushan. But why do we need to know this? So what do Chazal say? Why do we get into trouble in the story of the Megillah? Why do we have to have a situation where our very lives are on the line, our national existence is threatened?
We get sucked into this lowly.
Exactly. In fact, what exactly do Chazal say? You know, what chait was it?
The Mishnah.
They participated in the Seudas Achashverosh. That was their problem.
I heard Jonas saying, I think it was like yesterday or 2 days ago, that there's a machloket as to whether or not the Mishnah really caused it or not. Maybe it was something else.
I don't know.
I remember overhearing.
Okay, that. But certainly the Gemara does say that they it was because they benefited from Sudas HaChashverosh. So what was so harmful about, was so bad about that? It was the fact that they had tray food there. Who says they had even tray food? Who says maybe they brought in the Mahajan special kosher meals for the Jewish people there? That's because in the Delos and Trefos. What was the problem? The problem was one of orientation, of attitude, of priorities and values. And they got sucked into this culture of complete, total abandonment of any spiritual sensitivity whatsoever, and just completely sunk in physicality. That was what they were sunk in. They were part of it. In fact, check back at the beginning. Pasuk Zion. And tell me, what is the Medrash? There's a famous Medrash about this Pasuk.
Pasuk Zion, which parish?
Parik Aleph, Pasuk Zion. Tzvi, you want to say something? Oh, it says, V'cheilim mikeilim shonim. He brought out various different types of vessels. All right, we read it with the tune of Eicha. V'cheilim mikeilim shonim.
A couple times we've done it in the Megillah.
Yeah. So what's the pshat? Why is the Medrash emphasizing that? What is the significance of that to the story? Okay, let's say he used the keilim in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. So he made a mistake. He thought that the Golas, 70 years were up, and really they weren't. Okay, he made a mistake. So what does that have to do with us? So he was an idiot. What does that have to do with us? Imagine the irony. The Jewish people, so sad, they're participating in this feast, in this party, a party at which he's using Kalim from the Beis HaMikdash. What's he using it for? Whether he's using it to show off, so the Nevuos were not correct, or whether he's just stopped using it. Lamaisa, he's taking the most kadosh objects and using it in the context of absolute physicality, of complete obliteration of any spiritual sense. And you know what the Jews are doing? They're partying with him. And historically, what's going on at this time over in Eretz Yisrael?
Not in the Beit HaMikdash.
What's that?
The building of the second Beit HaMikdash has been stopped.
In other words, there was already a move to start to build the second Beit HaMikdash. They even started, they stopped. It was only later that they were able to continue and to really build the Beit HaMikdash. But in other words, Ezra already is leading what's known as Shivat Tzion, return to Tzion, return to Eretz Yisrael.
Wasn't that later?
What's that?
Wasn't that later?
I think it's already. At this point. I don't know.
How many years has it been since the Jews attempted to start rebuilding?
Right around this time, the predecessor of Achashverosh.
How many years after the exile?
Depends on what you mean by the exile. The exile happened in stages, so it's
when they were completely out.
Eric, 60 years. The era.
60 years.
I don't know. Check out your timelines. You have timelines. I'm sure the article will give you a timeline somewhere. And check out exactly how many years after each stage of the exile. Anyway, but this was the period of time where this was already something that should have been on our mind. Shivat Zion. And instead, what we're doing is we're partying at a party of this type in which the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash are being used. Okay? So that would certainly set the stage. Then we would really understand the context of the Megillah so that much better. We understand what the problem was that they needed to overcome. And not only that, we'll also understand how this story works out. It's Davka, when basically it's very interesting. Esther wants to go plead for the Jews, right? So what does she do? She bravely goes to Achashverosh, even though she hasn't been called. And he has Rachmanos, and he says, whatever you want, I'll give you. So she should have just said, don't kill the Jews. What does she say?
Come to
my wine party. And then come the next wine party. What are the wine parties? What's the pshat? That's how things get done in Shushan. You know, business lunch means it's a wine party. That's a, you can't have a serious conversation if you're not drunk. You know? So it helps us understand both the context, what got us into trouble, important lesson for our own lives, as well as just the continuation of the whole story and how it went down over the Mishnah Ayayin. It also gives a little bit of context to the minhag now we have nowadays, of course, that the Purim celebration is a more exuberant one than most celebrations in Judaism. Now, that has to be... I would just offer the following word. I could rant and rave about this for several minutes, but I won't. But I'll just offer the following word. It has to be done in a way which would be a tikkun for Seudas HaChashverosh and not a repeat of Seudas HaChashverosh. Okay? So if we're going to go ahead and to use the physicality, use that Seuda, even use the wine, L'Shabeach, L'Hale, L'Hodos, to praise Hashem, to appreciate his miracles, etc., etc., then Kavalik. If we're going to use it just as an opportunity to let out, to cut loose, to eat and drink and go crazy, and then throw up in someone's couch so that the Baal Zabayis can clean up your vomit or something like that, so that's called Seudas Achashverosh. Better you should fast than to have. All right, so you should have something. Seudas Purim. But that's obviously ridiculous. See people dancing through the streets, you know, bare chested with war paint, completely drunk, you know, jumping on cars or something. You have this. I don't think you have this in Seattle. You have this in Eretz Yisrael. So like, you know, blocking traffic and like, you know, whatever. So that's not called Purim. That's called various issues, really, but among them are more of an itiya towards Seudas HaChashverosh than towards Purim.
War paint.
Never mind.
Or are you exaggerating?
I don't want to get into it.
Slightly.
What's that? Nachal and Gedi should be relatively tame. It should be fine. If you go on Friday to certain areas of Yerushalayim, on the other hand, it won't be so tame. And not just Yerushalayim. Anyway. Okay, that's one mahalach. That's all one approach in understanding the first two prakim of Megillas Esther. There's a whole other approach which really casts the Megillah in a whole different light, presented by the Malbim. You familiar with the Malbim? The Malbim, famous, he's most famous for his commentary on Tanakh, commentary on Chumash, and on the rest of Nach as well. It's using actually a great posek as well. People are not aware of that in the 1800s. And what he does, very, very creative in his commentary. And he's also very attentive to the nuances in the text. If you're interested, it's a fascinating parish. You should get to know it in general. It's a parish. And he's super attentive to little differences in the text, and he all ties it all together in a very creative way. Unbelievable, unbelievable. Sometimes it's a little bit, it's so creative that you wonder why the other Mefarshim didn't say that. But sometimes it's unbelievably insightful. It's always insightful, always incredibly insightful. So the Malbim has a whole mahalik over here as well, which relates to a basic point with regard to Megillas Esther. Who is this Achashverosh character? Who is this guy? He's interested in partying and having the prettiest queen possible. Haman comes to him and is like, hey, can we exterminate a nation? He's like, alright, fine. And then Esther comes to him and like, that bad man is trying to kill my people. He's like, okay, kill him. And who is this guy? So one approach, which you maybe grew up with, is he's basically, it's a miracle that this guy's the king to begin with. You know, he's basically a stupid, half drunk or fully drunk, guy who basically cannot make up his mind about anything, goes back and forth, and doesn't care. All right, you want to kill them? Fine, whatever. You know, that's, I think, many people grew up with that impression of Achashverosh. Malam says, absolutely not. Achashverosh was sly, manipulative. He was smart, and he was also paranoid. And that's Ahasuerus.
See, I didn't even know that, though.
How do you know that? In Ahanami. We cannot prove it. We don't have Ahasuerus here to psychoanalyze.
No, I mean, even in the Megillah, how do you prove that?
Okay, check it out. Check it out. Read the Megillah after you hear this approach. See if you think that it works well. We'll discuss a little bit now. Says the Malbim, that's Ahasuerus. And if that's the case, so you can understand a lot of these stories. It makes a lot more sense. I got news for you. The way it worked in antiquity, if you were the king, so you had the life, you know, you had servants and you were rich and everything. And you had the life, it was probably going to be a short one, though. Most kings didn't live that long. And there were constant attempts to take over and to overthrow the king. If you look just in Tanakh even, just at Malchus Yisrael, how many revolutions were there? Every 3.5 years in Malchus Yisrael, as opposed to Malchus Yehuda. Malchus Yehuda is more stable, but in Malchus Yisrael, every 5 years there's another guy getting, the king gets killed, assassinated, and you got a new guy coming up. So you got to be ruling with an iron fist. What's that?
There's at least one, can't remember the name right now, that I think ruled for like 7 days.
Yeah, there was one period of time where within half a year there were 3 different assassinations, if not mistaken.
3 different assassinations.
If I'm not mistaken, 2-3 assassinations within a few months.
His son was killed, and then that guy was there for as I said, I think it was only a matter of days, and then he killed himself. Actually,
killed himself.
Yeah,
Sefer, I don't remember that one. Malachim.
Malachim.
Sefer Malachim. Anyway. Check it out. It was a crazy world. So if you were like basically in a drunken stupor your whole life and stupid,
there's no way you could have done that.
You can't survive. No way. No way. Right? You had to be ruling with an iron fist. You have to be like Bashar Assad or something like that to survive as a king in antiquity. So it says the Malbim, that's who Ahasuerus was. Now, there are several things that can become clear with this approach, and let's just discuss a few of them. Here's how he works that into the first 2 prakim. You ready? You have a report for us too.
Yeah, it was Zimri.
How long was he in for?
7 days.
And then, Ayla was killed. Zimri was killed right afterwards.
Right. I believe that Zimri killed himself, and then Tifni lasted for another 5 years.
Another 5 years.
That's
all right.
Made a mistake.
And you have again later on also 6 years, 1 year, 10 years, 2 years, 15 years. You have 4 kings. So anyway, the Lemaisa
was for 6 months, and then Shalom for 1 month.
1 month.
Then.
All right, so there you have it. So you have 3 kings in 7 months over there.
Do I have it in this?
All right, Rabbi Sai, check it out afterwards.
What publication is that?
No, you don't have it in there. That's a chumash.
Oh, why would you have it in the chumash?
Okay. Here's how he takes it at the beginning. He takes it as follows. Chazal say that Ahasuerus, what was his right to the kingship?
Married Nebuchadnezzar's granddaughter.
Right, so he he was not of royal descent, royal lineage. He was a regular old guy. In fact, the Gemara claims that he was a stable boy. And he got really rich, and he worked himself into a good position, and somehow he ended up taking over. His claim to a legitimate kingship was the fact that he was married to Vashti. Because Vashti was the granddaughter, if I'm not mistaken, of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel. Paras took over from Babel.
Isn't it in the first parak?
No. Now, if you look, let's read the psukim together. Check this out. Vahi bimei Ahasuerus. Hu Ahasuerus. Hamoled meodu v'arkush. It wasn't the days of Ahasuerus. Yeah, that Ahasuerus who ruled. I don't call him Vahi bimei Hamelech Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus, he was a regular guy, and then he was Molech. And then he ruled. He took over as the king. Right? And then it says by Yomim Ohem, in those days when he sat on his throne in Shushan Abira, right? What's the pshat? He says like this. Achashverosh was making a power play over here. He's making a power play. He wanted to consolidate his power and to become the absolute monarch on his own. For that reason, he changed the capital from Bavel to Paras, to Shushan. That's going on here in Pasuk Gimel. Look at the next Pasuk. Fascinating. Pshnat Shalosh L'malcho, Asam Mishtel, L'chol Sarav Avadov. Okay. He makes a party. Who's coming to this party?
Officials and servants.
So very interesting. Look at the order. Kol Sarav Vavadov, his officers and servants. That's what it says first. Chel Parasu Madai.
The
officers and the army of those Parasu Madai, Apartamim. V'sareh medinos lefanav. Here's how the Malbim reads that. Sareh medinos lefanav, the officers of the provinces before him. That's the old aristocracy. Sareh medinos lefanav. But they get mentioned at the end. He's making a party. Yeah, it's through the medium of partying. But he has a very clear objective, which is shifting the balance of power. He's going to invite only important people, only the aristocracy, but he's giving precedence to Sarav Vavadav, his people, his inside people. Right? The Sarav Medinos Lefanav, they get sort of pushed to the back. Now it's very fascinating. Let's talk about Vashti for a second. Look at Pasuk Tes, right? You see that? Never mind Pasuk Tes. Let's go to Pasuk Yud. Yud Aleph. He tells his servants, "Lavias Vashti Amalkol Lefnei Melech, Vechesem Malchus." What's the point? To bring Vashti, to show her off. What's the point? He wants to make it very clear that he's in charge. She's completely subservient to him. If I command you to come and to lower yourself, to disgrace yourself by showing off yourself as an object of viewing interest to the entire crowd, you'll do it. And it's interesting that it calls her Vashti Amalka. What about in Pasuk Yud Beis? What does it say? And this is classic Malbim, attentiveness to the text here. Hamalka Vashti. She says, "I'm not Vashti Amalka. I'm not Vashti, who's the queen. My identity is that I'm the queen. Hamalka Vashti. You got another thing coming, buddy. You, I'm more royal lineage than you." And she shows him up.
Isn't the same in the beginning when it goes from Achashverosh to Achashverosh, Hamalek to Melech
Achashverosh? Exactly. He tries to do that to her, make her into Vashti Amalka. And from her perspective, she's Hamalka Vashti. Why does he get so furious about that? Because what's that doing? It's undermining everything he's trying to accomplish right now. He's trying to show that he's in charge. Even Vashti of royal lineage is subservient to him completely. And what's she saying? "No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I am Hamalka Vashti." That's why it's such a threat. Can you imagine a capital crime? You don't show, you're willing to come dance before the public. The pshat is that this was undermining his whole play for power. He disposes of Vashti. What is his criteria? What are his criteria for getting a new queen in Perek Beis?
She's beautiful.
Just beauty, just beauty. Nothing about royal lineage. Kings generally marry princesses. That's how it goes. Marry a princess. He doesn't want to marry a princess. He wants it to be clear that he's just taking someone as beautiful. His queen has no authority, no inherent real status of her own, other than that he places the crown, as the Megillah says, on her head. It's interesting. How does the Torah describe Esther's background vis-a-vis everyone else? How does everyone else see Esther? Where does she come from? What's her lineage? What's her status as far as the rest of the world knows? Nothing. Nothing. Perfect. Perfect. We don't even know who this girl is. She picked up some girl off the street. She's from nothing. She's got no yichus. She's not the, you know, important woman from such and such a place. She is absolutely nothing on her own until I place the crown on her head. That's the environment that we're talking about. Maybe it's possible. The first two prakim are here to give us a sense of the political intrigue that's going on over here. Achashverosh is paranoid, and he's making a play for power, and that sets the stage to understand everything. For example, the whole Bigson Viterish story plays right into it. Plays right into his paranoia. They are trying to assassinate him. They are. Okay? They are actually trying to assassinate him. What do you have later on in the Megillah? Think about this. What's Pshat? It's very interesting. Very fascinating. Esther invites Haman and Achashverosh to the party. Remember that? Why does she do that? Why invite Haman? He's the enemy. Why not have a one-on-one with Achashverosh without Haman getting in the way, so you can tell Achashverosh how bad Haman is?
I think his presence makes Esther's request a little much stronger, because then Haman is forced to look at the reality of things, and then
Haman doesn't have to look at any reality. Achashverosh has to look at the reality. All Haman has to look at is the gallows. But okay, all right. And it's very interesting. What happens at that first party? Nothing, right? All she says is, I have a really, really important request. He says, what is it, my dear? Anything? And she says, come party again tomorrow. And then I'll tell you. Okay. Interesting. So they all come back tomorrow. What happens in between? Nadudosh Nasamelech. Achashverosh can't sleep. They read the book of Zichronos before him, right? Now, it could just be all complete coincidence, or Hashgacha Pratis, obviously. Right? Or maybe the Hashgacha Pratis is working through some pretty serious, you know, manipulation, intrigue, paranoia, and chachma. Listen to the following. And the Gemara mentions various different possible reasons why Esther invited Haman. But one of them is as follows. Maybe Esther wanted to plant a funny idea in Achashverosh's head. Maybe Achashverosh was also like, hey, that's a little weird that it's just, you know, just the three of us. Me, the queen, and Haman. What's up with that? Maybe Nadudash Nasa Melech, you know why? Because he starts to wonder, maybe there's something, maybe Haman and Esther are getting a little too close. Maybe there's danger from there that I haven't thought of. Maybe Haman's a threat, or maybe Haman and Esther are a threat, right? And it's not the Shnas HaMelech. And why does he ask to bring the Sefer HaZichronos? He wants to know, who are my friends? Who can I count on? Who's loyal? Right? And maybe there are friends that I haven't taken care of. Because if there's a threat, people have got to know about it. There's got to be some people who know. And if there are some people who know and they're not telling me, maybe that's because I haven't rewarded those people well enough in the past. And what does he hear about? Mordechai. And all of a sudden, things start floating around in his head even more. Right? And again, Haman comes, and just then, and Achashverosh says, what should we do to him? Now you can view that as complete Hashgacha Pratis for a silly king and whatever. Or maybe everyone's being totally manipulative here. Esther plays into Achashverosh's paranoia. Right? Achashverosh starts thinking, I can't believe it. Mordechai, I didn't remember that he saved my life. That he was the one who told Esther. Right? I can't believe it. And now he thinks, hold on a second. Who did Haman want to kill?
Well, everyone.
I'm Mordechai. That's what it says. I'm Mordechai. Now, that's a little strange. And who's knocking at the door in the middle of the night? Haman! Now Achashverosh gets manipulative. And he says to Haman, listen, what should I do to give someone, you know, real good cover? Why? Because he knows that Haman is a Balgaiva. He knows that Haman's going to think, who does the king want to honor more than me? And he wants to hear what Haman wants. He wants to hear what Haman wants because he wants to figure out if Haman is a threat. And it's very interesting. If you look at the Lashon HaMegillah, we have to do this quickly because we only have another couple minutes. I don't want to make you late for a Boaz. If you look at the Lashon, so Achashverosh wants to know from his servants what Yikaru Gdula was done to Mordechai. When he asks Haman for an idea, you know what he said? When he skips, he says Yakar, he skips Gdula. You know why? Haman was as gadol as he could be already. If he wants Haman to think he's talking about him, he can't talk about Gedula because he's already been elevated. He's already gotten as many advancements, career advancements as he could possibly get. And what does Haman say that he wants? Basically, the crown. He asks for the crown. Achashverosh is like, whoa. And now it's perfect. Hashkacha sets it up perfectly. The stage is set for Esther to say to Achashverosh. At the second party, Achashverosh is like drinking, but he can hold his wine, not to worry. And he is like, he's got his eyes. He's got the guards at the door probably. He's got his eyes on Haman and Mordechai and Esther. And Esther's like, you know what the real issue is? He's trying to kill us. And Achashverosh is like, down with him. He is primed. He's primed to take down Haman. And in order to understand all of this, in order to understand the context, in order to understand the paranoia, in order to understand everything, you need to have the first two prakim. The first two prakim set the stage for Achashverosh as the paranoid, power-hungry, smart, sly, manipulative king. Yes.
How does that explain him allowing Haman to decree to kill the Jews?
Well, it's very interesting. What does Haman tell Achashverosh? V'stasei ha-melech inam osim. And they're spread out everywhere. In other words, Haman tells Achashverosh exactly what Haman plays into Achashverosh's paranoia also. He says, you got this cancer called the Jews. You know what? They're everywhere. They're everywhere. They've infiltrated everything. And they're not loyal. And if they turn on you all the way, then you're in trouble because they're everywhere. And Achashverosh is like, wow, that's a real big threat. Yeah. Take them out. And it's fascinating to note, and with this I'll end because I don't want you to be late, that Haman tells Achashverosh, Dosei ha-melech enam osim. And Esther's so scared of going to the Achashverosh, asher lo kados. Right? And it's dafka through that, through going asher lo kados. Hashkacha works it out. Kadosh Baruch Hu works things out. Dafka in going asher lo kados is the nation which was condemned because Dasa Melech Inam Osim. Dafka through that, they're saved. I think there's even a great Lashon. Where is it? Ever been down here somewhere? Alright, I don't want to keep you. Anyway, I think this gives us a little bit of insight into the story of the Megillah, into the characters involved, and hopefully we will take the right messages. Have a wonderful rest of the day.